This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Well, this is the first weekend of President Donald Trump's administration, though there's likely not going to be much done before Monday. But that doesn't mean there aren't things to anticipate being done. We'll have more on that a little later in the show. Earlier this week, just days before he left the Oval Office, President Obama commuted the sentences of a pair of high-profile military prisoners and pardoned a controversial former Marine Corps general. Among the hundreds of commutations and pardons announced by the White House was one for Bradley Chelsea Manning, serving 35 years for leaking sensitive Army documents related to the Iraq War. On Wednesday, FRC President Tony Perkins sat down with Representative Mo Brooks of Alabama to discuss it.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
My pleasure.
You tweeted out yesterday that this was shocking. You have concerns about its impact on national security and what it might do to encourage others to divulge secrets going forward.
You've got national security at stake. And for those people who just think of that as a term, they need to be thinking of it more in line of 300 and some odd million Americans whose lives are at risk if we don't have the kind of weaponry or capabilities necessary to stop foreign nations from attacking and trying to kill us. And what Mr. Manning did was share classified information that put that national security at risk, which in turn means he contributed to putting at risk the lives of hundreds of millions of Americans. That's serious.
And there are some, Congressman, that are saying that it's not just hypothetical that this release could endanger, but in fact that we have this did lead to the deaths of some of those who were providing information to the United States that was divulged in this release of information.
Well, in my view, he should have been executed as a traitor for having committed treason against the United States. That's how seriously I take someone divulging classified information.
Well, let's take on this issue, Congressman Brooks. They say that the penalty for him was excessive, but when you look at others, now they're suggesting that his actions were more like a whistleblower because he didn't agree with what the United States was doing, and so therefore he was releasing this information to expose what he thought was wrongdoing. Now, Aldrich Ames, who is serving a life sentence without possibility of parole, was one of the someone who released classified information. You might remember Jonathan Pollard. He was a former intel analyst for the Navy. He received life in prison for same thing, espionage. He released information to our ally Israel that he felt was being kept from Israel. He served 28 years of his life sentence, according to federal guidelines, and was released in 2015. So in light of that, and there are other cases, Robert Hansen, was this sentence of 35 years excessive?
No, I don't believe it was excessive, in as much as in certain periods of time, he would have been executed for having betrayed his country. Let's bear in mind that there are basically two types of traitors. One does it for money, and the other does it because, in some misguided way, they think it's the right thing to do. Neither motivation affects the risk that it poses to the United States of America, the damage that is done regardless of motive. And when you're talking about putting at risk the lives of 300-plus million American citizens, the stakes are so high that you have to punish people who engage in espionage at the most draconian of levels in order to deter others from perhaps actually leaking the information that results in massive loss of American life. You know, all this kind of begs two different questions, too, that you just have to wonder. One of the things I wonder about is if Mr. Manning had not done the transgender thing, would Barack Obama still have commuted his sentence? Another thing you have to wonder is whether this is a precursor to a presidential pardon for the endangerment of classified information done by Hillary Clinton. So we'll find out over the next couple of days where Barack Obama is taking this. And this is just another bad example by a bad administration that does not understand the seriousness of national security classified documents and seems to not care that much about putting America at risk.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Alabama Congressman Mo Brooks, my guest, talking about the president commuting the sentence of Bradley Chelsea Manning yesterday, sentenced to 35 years for releasing over 755,000 classified documents, which essentially gave WikiLeaks their start. That's where they got going. You made reference to something, Congressman, regarding the background of this case. In fact, in the defense of commuting the sentence of Manning, a lot of discussion about how he was confused at the time, depressed because of his sexual identity, and whether or not that was a factor in the president. If he were not so-called transgender, would the president have released him from prison? It's interesting that the Gallup did an analysis of this administration, and that when they look at, this is ongoing, they look at 19 policy areas, and in all but five, and practically the only one where they did extremely well, was on issues related to gays and lesbians. On other things like national security, crime, they got negative ratings from the American public. So was that more the driving issue here, the national security? Was the fact that this guy's sexual identity?
I wish I could read the mind of Barack Obama and know for sure. It does raise a legitimate question as to what weight was given and what benefit was given to Mr. Manning from his having been through the transgender process. And I call him Mr. because this is science. This is medicine. And there's facts, and there are things that aren't facts. And the fact of the matter is, if you were to test his DNA, he's still a guy. You can do all sorts of sordid things to one's body, but that doesn't change your DNA and what you are. But regardless of whether any of that played a role in Manning's decision to put America at risk, that still does not change the deterrence effect of severe punishment for those people who commit espionage against America, thereby putting hundreds of millions of American lives at risk.
The
stakes are just too high. You have to punish them severely in order to discourage future espionage taking place that may actually cost a large number of American lives.
You can find a link to FRC's statement on Bradley Chelsea Manning when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a surprising look at who has access to explicit material in one Colorado school district. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Pro-Life Con is FRC's Digital Action Summit, celebrating digital pro-life activism. Watch free online on January 27th from FRC's headquarters in Washington. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, activists, and testimonies from families and individuals who choose life. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning from the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Parents of students at Fox Ridge Middle School in Colorado are speaking out after discovering an online portal to explicit images that wouldn't get past most internet filters. A local family stumbled on the pornographic materials as they were checking their child's password access at school. Now they're exposing what the district never intended moms and dads to see, a controversial sex education site filled with erotica, advice on performing certain acts, and information on much, much more. Fox Ridge Middle School parent Drew Patterson joined Tony earlier this week to talk about what he discovered.
Drew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
So, Drew, is that an accurate description of the material and how students are accessing it?
It's a very accurate description, and it's compounded as well by the district refusing to issue notification letters to the parents, warning them that this material might be available through these portals. And so not only are they hiding it from the parents through the parent login to the school website, but then they are refusing to let parents know that this danger exists.
Now, I understand your wife, Robin, who has a PhD in research, was working in the district's website and noticed this resource link through the portal where the students can quickly find their way to this pornographic material. You've tried to bring this to the attention of school officials, superintendent, and others, and they've pretty much just kind of blown you off.
Yeah, pretty much. It's been a long struggle. This has been going on for 5 months. We've attended each monthly school board meeting since we found it approximately 5 months ago, some of them very hostile, very heated. Typically in a school board meeting, you get 3 minutes to make your presentation. And for the most part, it's not a question and answer, so they don't answer any of your questions. But on occasion, when we have presented at the school board meeting, there has been some evidenced hostility. The superintendent shouted at my wife. There's been some sort of sarcastic, derogatory remarks. We've had a two-hour meeting with the superintendent, the assistant superintendent, and the CIO, all of whom agreed that a large portion of this material cannot be filtered out by their current filters.
Now, I also understand that the superintendent had reported you to the police for using obscene remarks at one of the school board meetings, and they were not actually remarks. You were quoting from the material that was available to the children.
That's absolutely correct, and it's ironic that they would refer to a school board or a district policy preventing the use of obscenity in defense and to shut us down from arguing about their same policy should be prohibiting the provision of obscenities to children.
That's quite incredible to me. Drew, how are other parents responding to this as it's becoming more widely known that this is taking place?
It started out slow, and we did have a couple of parents that expressed some interest, but they're somewhat reluctant to get involved early because they feared for any intimidation or retaliation against their kids at school, which I think parents have been experiencing. But as this story gets out, more and more parents are joining, and it's interesting to note that this isn't restricted to either the Cherry Creek School District or the state of Colorado. It is nationwide where schools are using these particular databases such as EBSCO, ProQuest, Sears Knowledge Source, ABC Clio, and the account exec for EBSCO has admitted that they have non-censorship agreements with their publishers that restrict them from censoring any of the information within their databases. So it's just a free-for-all. They send it out there, and they disclaim any responsibility for the use. The schools say, well, our filters will filter it out, and it doesn't. And in any event, it sidesteps the issue of kids doing homework at home.
Right.
They put all the responsibility on the kids, and if something happens, well, the kids are to blame.
Well, Drew, we're almost out of time. I want to ask you this aspect of where parents have a different password that restricts them from getting to the same material that the kids have access to. That sounds deliberate.
I would think so, yeah. I would think so. It's, an attempt to hide information from parents.
Oh, incredible. How can other parents become more aware of this?
I think what they need to do is go to their school website, go into the navigate to the library catalog, and if you see any resource tiles such as EBSCO, EBSCO Host, ABC Clio, ProQuest, or Sears Knowledge Source, if you see those there, you may not be able to get into them, but if you see them, you have reason to be concerned.
Wow. Drew, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for taking up this cause. I hope that you'll continue until you see it resolved.
We will continue. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate the opportunity.
We encourage you to be in prayer for Drew as he continues this fight in Colorado. Don't go away. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
What will Donald do during his first 100 days in office? Family Research Council has laid out a conservative playbook for the president-elect to follow in order to repair some of the damage done by the Obama administration's liberal elite special interests. In a timely panel discussion, policy experts lay out a game plan of actions that the Trump administration can take in its first 100 days. Visit frc.org/first100 to view this policy discussion.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. We've discussed the party platforms on this program before, and as President Trump plans on hitting the ground running on Monday, it's important to remember that the party platform is the foundation of his legislative agenda. On Thursday, Jonathan Gardner, who worked with Tony Perkins on the Republican Party platform, joined him once again to talk about the platform and the presidency.
Jonathan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good evening, Mr. Perkins. Pleasure to be with you.
Sorry I missed you today. I know you passed by FRC. It was good to hear you come by and for our open house. And I just want to take just a moment and focus on this platform, because this was a very significant document, as it's turned out. It was really a driver for many social conservatives, helping them decide who they were going to vote for. Your sense of how important that document should be going forward for both the administration and the Congress?
Well, it should be quite important for both the administration and the Congress. What the platform did was communicate to the American people that this election was about much more than just personalities. It was also about values. And it laid out a very stark and competing vision of values compared with the values that Hillary Clinton was running on. And now that the voters have spoken and they have awarded Mr. Trump and they have awarded Congress power based on those values, as you just said, 59% saying that a major factor in their decision to vote for the president, Mr. Trump, was the Republican Party platform stance. It's important from a commitment standpoint. I was at an event back in July at the Republican National Convention, and Phyllis Schlafly basically threw her support behind Donald Trump after he had committed to her that he was going to support the party platform. So there are a lot of people that have now been handed power based on the party platform, and with that comes responsibility now to follow through on it. So when you look at the numbers for Congress in particular, the American people as a whole are not happy with Congress as an institution, and it would definitely behoove them to follow through on the ideas contained within the Republican Party platform as a way of keeping faith with the people that put them in office.
And I think it's a way, Jonathan, that now citizens can hold the party accountable and Congress, the administration, accountable to that, because this is the roadmap forward on so many issues.
And it's the roadmap forward on so many issues. It's also the statement of official party policy on so many issues. You don't have the same thing as you had back in the 90s with Newt Gingrich in a contract with America, where Congress was saying, these are what we commit to you, the American people, that we will do. But you do have a strong statement of policy and a strong statement of values that the American people can now take to Republicans in Congress and actually at all levels of government.
Right.
And say, look, your party says you support this. The party says you're supporting life. What are you doing for life? The party says that you're supporting marriage between a man and a woman. What are you doing to support marriage between a man and a woman? And that then gives a tool. That's really the harder step. Now you have a good statement of policy. The challenge now for us as involved citizens is to use that resource to demand accountability from our elected officials, so it becomes more than words on paper. It becomes good policy.
Absolutely. And we have our work cut out for us. Jonathan Gardner, thanks so much for joining us. And again, great work on that party platform.
Thank you. My privilege.
When we come back, a bonus segment on the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Marriages everywhere are in crisis. The divorce rate is sky high. What can turn things around? The key lies in what God has bestowed on mankind, incarnational attachment. This in turn leads to the transforming power of being emotionally present in marriage. In a profound lecture by Dr. Jesse Gill, discover more about embracing God's design for attachment for marriage and our Christian faith in ways that bring transformation and growth. Visit frc.org/events to view this lecture and many more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Evangelical voters turned out in record numbers for the presidential election, many believing it made the difference in getting President Donald Trump elected. Pastor Robert Morris serves on President Trump's Evangelical Advisory Board and joined FRC President Tony Perkins on Thursday.
Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to be with you.
Now, earlier today, we were at an inauguration prayer event just down the street from FRC. We had Christian leaders from across the country coming together to pray for the president, pray for the country. Clearly, there is a mood of, I would say, hopefulness, encouragement going into this inauguration on behalf of Christians across the country.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. In 2008 and 2012, I was very much involved in trying to get evangelicals to come together to pray for our country, to vote, to be involved. And there's no comparison to what happened this year. And I was thinking today at that prayer meeting, God, you did this, because finally there seems to be some unity coming in the body of Christ. Yes, concern for our nation, but not just concern for the political direction, but concern for the spiritual direction. And that's what I heard even more of today, is that we were praying for our nation, praying for our leaders, like it says in Romans and Timothy to do. And man, it was just powerful today to see evangelicals from all walks coming together to pray for our country.
And Pastor Morris, there's a sense, at least what I came away with, is that there's an understanding that God did this. You're right. This was birthed, I think, in prayer, that God has extended a reprieve, if you will, to this nation. But there's still a lot that has to be done that must be sustained by prayer, but requires that each of us, not just looking to government, but looking to our own lives, to our own communities and our churches, to make the difference that needs to take place in this country.
Yeah, there's the two, you know, like James says, faith and works. There's the faith end of it, and the faith end of it to me is that I really believe that my prayers are going past the ceiling, that God, for some reason, designed the earth for us to cooperate with Him, and we cooperate it through that, those two ways, faith and works. In other words, we cooperate through prayer and praying for our neighbor to come to Christ, but we also cooperate by getting to know our neighbor and becoming a friend and being kind and showing him or her Christ, and then also sharing with him about the gospel. So I think that's where we are now. We've got to pray for our nation, but then we've also got a job to do.
So, Pastor Morris, what are your expectations? What are you hopeful that we will see coming out of Washington, D.C., that will have an impact on communities across the nation in the days ahead?
Well, I'm hopeful that we'll see some backtracking of this anti-Christian sentiment that's come out of our nation in the past many years. You know, I mean, we could go back a long way, but back to even coming against prayer in schools, or prayer at all, or scripture on government property, or nativity scene, and of course abortion, and then the issues of marriages that have come forth. So I want to see a lot of that change, because I don't think that policy obviously represents scriptural views. So I want to see those things on Washington change and reverse. But I want to emphasize to believers, we're still in a war. Satan's not just going to give up and lie down and say, okay, you guys have won. I think he's going to come every which way he can, and we need to understand how powerful we are when we come together and pray. And I think there's no doubt evangelicals made a huge difference in this election, and you don't hear it much in the media, because I think most people who are against evangelicals don't want us to know that we could make a difference if we come together.
No question about that. The exit polling makes it very clear that evangelicals played a key role in this election outcome. It is interesting that within a couple of days that narrative was dropped from the media, and I do think that is in part what you pointed out is the motivation that if we continue in that strain or vein of unity, advocating for those core freedoms and not looking for government to solve our problems, but asking government to protect our freedoms so that we in our local communities, in our churches can solve the problems. That is a powerful dynamic. And I don't think the left wants that to be realized by us.
No, they don't at all. Satan doesn't want when, and I'm not saying calling the left now Satan, but I'm going back to that spiritual force that the enemy's trying to do. He doesn't want us to know the power that we have if we come together. He doesn't want us to understand the power of prayer and the power of unity. And I think, though, we got a glimpse of it in this election that, wow, we can make a difference if we quit fighting and we quit saying, you know, we weren't electing a national pastor. I shared that with our church. We were electing a political leader, and we had two choices. So you have to vote for the person that you think will really do the least amount of damage. You'd love to vote for the person that will do the most good, but sometimes we don't even have that choice. And we have to make a choice as Christians. We have to be involved. We have to let our voice be heard. We have to pray. And then we have to do exactly what we did, and that's vote.
Absolutely. Pastor Robert Morris, thank you so much for joining us, and I want to thank you for letting your voice be heard across the country in terms of the Christian responsibility to be engaged in the world around us. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you all for all you're doing as well.
If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to it by heading over to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.